A couple of weeks ago, Congressman Peter DeFazio stepped into our offices to talk about some of the things that he was working on, and here is that interview on this edition of Our Town. Joining me in the studio now, Congressman Peter DeFazio is with us today, and good day to you. I hope you had a good trip up the coast.
Yeah, thanks. We've been on the road for 3 days, did a big circuit of the district, Grants Pass, over to Brookings, and then up the coast, and now we're here.
Now, I understand you were looking at some bridges for some bridge projects coming up. Was that?
Yeah, we were in Douglas County. The bridge by Oakland there has been one lane for, I don't know, many years. It's obsolete, and it's also now structurally failing. So that's a big project for Douglas County, and half the money will come from the federal government to replace it. And then they've got another large bridge project that I'm going to try and help them get them federal money for. And then they get a lot of small bridges. But, you know, Douglas County isn't unique. I mean, the whole country is falling apart. We got 47,000 bridges on the national highway system that need substantial repair or replacement. So that's why, you know, I worked on and we passed a really big infrastructure package in the House. Senate hasn't done anything yet, so I'm doubtful we'll get it done this Congress. But, you know, I put down a marker you know, we'll try and get something done.
And the thing is, too, is that, that this could be a deadly mistake not getting these bridges fixed. I mean, we already saw it, you know, once already in the past few years.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened down in New Orleans area, I think somewhere down in that a couple mm-hmm. of years ago. So not doing anything is probably could affect somebody's life. I mean,
sure. I mean, yeah. you have the potential for catastrophic failure and deaths. You also have the fact that, you know, people have to be rerouted. And in like a rural county like Douglas County, they're telling me about one place where there's a bridge needs to be replaced. And the log trucks got an extra 2 hours on their runs because of this weight limited bridge. So it hurts the economy. It potentially, you know, could, you know, can actually lead to death of people. So, and the good news is, if we do this work, we're going to put a heck of a lot of people to work. I look at my infrastructure package, which is roads, bridges, highways, transit, rail, wastewater, and ports, as a recovery package. We're going to need a lot of jobs as we come out of this depression, essentially, that we're in now with COVID. And these aren't just construction jobs. You know, they're design engineering, they're small business suppliers, they're manufacturing, they're high tech when you get to transit vehicles and trains and that. So it's a lot of work for people.
Let's switch over to something else that's happening right now, and that is the situation with the post office. You know, you hear both sides, you know, with their talking points, and it's good to have you here to get sort of straight from your perspective as to how bad is this situation really? Were some of these things already needing to happen, or is this just a ditch effort to affect the election?
Well, you know, the new postmaster general who gave a couple of $1 million to Trump's campaign has no postal experience, you know, has said, well, he has to do this because the post office is losing so much money. Actually, I passed a bill in February. It wasn't unanimous, but it was bipartisan. I had 80 Republicans vote for it, I think 89 Republicans, to say the post office should not put any more money into prepaying health care for the next 75 years for their future employees, which is a mandate from the Bush era. It cost them $6 billion a year to do that. Mm. And before COVID, the post office, without that $6 billion a year to pay for the health care costs of people who haven't been born yet, who might someday work for the Postal Service, would have been breaking even. And then he says he wants to make it more efficient. Well, how does it make it more efficient when you take out the sorting machines and the barcoders? It doesn't. You know, years ago, they laid off or fired a whole bunch of mail handlers, and they brought in the machines because the machines were more efficient. Now he's unplugging and removing the machines, but they're not going to hire mail handlers. What does that mean? It means the mail piles up. Last year, the post office delivered 125 million prescriptions for veterans in this country on time. And this year, they can't do it. I'm getting calls. My office is getting calls from vets. The VA Roseburg is calling us and saying, hey, we're really concerned about this. You know, the VA is, you know, they're on a, you know, not the most generous of budgets. So when your prescription is up, they'll send it out to you like 4 or 5 days in advance. They're not going to send it out 2 weeks in advance,
right?
Because they're budgeting. But now the mail can't get there in 4 or 5 days, even though it's first class. That's ridiculous. I mean, this guy is destroying the Postal Service. I mean, the reason the Bush people put in the mandate for pre-funding retirement health care was because they think we should just privatize the post office. Well, you know what privatization means? It means small cities, rural areas, they won't have mail service.
Right.
I mean, the big companies be happy to do, you know, big cities, although the costs will go up dramatically. I mean, go and try and mail a letter at FedEx. I think it's $6, let alone, you know, as opposed to 55 cents. It's obscene what he's doing. And the post office now, obviously with COVID, is having a crisis like virtually every other agency, federal government, states, local government, schools, everybody. We're going to vote on Saturday to put $25 billion into the Postal Service, which would supposedly get them through the next 2 years of COVID, if it lasts that long. And we're going to mandate that he put the machines back in the sorting centers and deliver the mail the way we were delivering it before he took over in January.
Now, do you see this as stopping this, as the feedback that has come from this and the pushback that has come from this? Or did you think that maybe they were going to do a little bit of this and then stop so that it was just enough to cause problems?
No, in fact, just today, emails came to light sent by senior management under his direction to local managers saying, if we have not removed your machines, you are not allowed to plug them back in and use them. And if you've removed them, you can't put them back in. So what he said, this week was a bit disingenuous. Yeah, he's not going to do any more damage, but he's already done a lot of damage. And, you know, what's the deal? I mean, plug the damn machines back in. I just read a news account that down in L.A., there's so much mail piled up that, you know, like fruit that's being Harry and David's or whatever, it's rotting in the sorting center, and they're attracting rats and vermin. This is an incredible disservice to American business, to the American people, to this country. It is the United States Postal Service. It is in the Constitution of the United States of America. It is the most basic service that a government can provide, universal mail service.
Now, before the president started speaking about how he was worried about mail-in ballots, we had, I believe, 5 states that for years have been doing mail-in ballots mm-hmm. exclusively. I mean, Oregon is here.
Yep.
And then I think there's only another 2 or 3 that were going to start the practice this year. So this was just, this doesn't make sense to me from someone who goes, well, they've already been doing it. Why now? It just seems like the timing is very suspicious.
Well, the timing is incredibly suspicious. And by the way, the president and his wife have signed up to vote by mail in their new home state of Florida.
Yeah.
So it's hypocritical at best. There's a couple of things going on. Trump hates Jeff Bezos, who owns Amazon. He thinks the post office is subsidizing Amazon. So he's been carrying on about the post office for a couple of years. But now the new agenda seems to be to disrupt mail-in balloting. But I think it's a mistake on their part. A lot of seniors have, in the last few elections, voted Republican for the presidency. And they're the people most likely to want to have vote by mail, particularly in a time of COVID when they are the most vulnerable people.
And they're vulnerable with, like you said earlier, the medications not showing
right.
up on time.
Addition to the veterans, a lot of people get their prescriptions by mail, particularly people on Medicare, because they'll give you a better price if you say, okay, you can send it by mail, because then they use just a central processing center. You can't go to your local pharmacy with some of these health plans under Medicare Part D. They're getting delays too. And it's, that can be life-threatening for someone.
So you said you're going to be in D.C. to vote on this.
Mm-hmm.
If the vote passes, Does it then still have to go before the Senate? So it's got to go through that?
It does, but I think the Senate's feeling some pressure on this. Yeah. You know, we'll see. Even now, Trump says, well, they can have more money. Yeah, I would. Yeah, you know, earlier in the week, he said, no, or last week, they couldn't have more money. But now this week, he's saying, yeah, I guess, they can have more money. So, but he's still against, vote by mail or universal vote by mail.
All right, let's switch up a little bit here. Was it 3-4 weeks ago, maybe a month ago? Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said, we're not going home until we get this fixed. And then they went home. You guys had already passed your part of it.
Right.
What are the hopes of something being done? Because I'm not sure when the Senate's coming back.
There are rumors that, there's the ice is thawing on the Senate side, and maybe they're ready to get something done. They've got 4 or 5 Republican senators who are very anxious about their elections, and they think that doing nothing is going to hurt them. Then again, he has a hardcore group of people led by Ted Cruz and people like that are saying, no, not a penny more, no more money for food assistance, no more money for unemployment assistance, no more money for health care, no more money for states. They're saying, no more money. So there's a problem. Mitch has a problem within his own caucus of these very hardline people. So he's inevitably going to have to work with the Democrats in the Senate to pass something. So, and he's been reluctant to do that, but I think he's coming around.
Is there that much difference to, yes, I'm sure that $200 a week is that much difference. But for the Congress to the Senate, would it be possible to pass it with the $400 instead of six? I do understand, I do understand that some people are using this as an opportunity to not have to go back to work. And not everybody is, but there are some people that are doing there. Is there a middle ground there not at all versus?
The president's $400 plan would require the states to set up a whole new process and for all the states to chip in $100.
Right.
And a number of states have already said, no, we can't do that. We won't do that. And Oregon can't even process claims now, let alone if they had to adopt a whole new system. It needs to be the same as it's been as much as, But yeah, I think the amount is negotiable from my perspective. But, that's
kind of what I was asking. Yeah. I don't see... Like you said, I don't see setting up a whole new system, reinventing the wheel if you already have a process in place.
Right.
I was just curious about the negotiation.
Yeah, I have expressed that to the speaker that I thought that, we should be flexible on the amount of money. $300 or $400 is a heck of a lot better than nothing for someone who's unemployed. Now, in Oregon, unemployment, when the state can process it, is more generous than in many other states. There are states where unemployment is $125 a week. Now, you can't feed your family or keep your house or keep the lights on $125 a week in some of those other states.
No, that's kind of impossible to do. And of course, the whole issue that Oregon's going through right now is a whole nother story altogether, and obviously that's a state's issue.
Well, yet it is and it isn't, because the federal government gave Oregon $80 million, I think,
distribute
9 years ago to update their computer system, and the legislature and the governors never spent it. I mean, that's mind-boggling. Mm. I mean, why wouldn't they have? They've still got the federal money, but they never upgraded their computer system. They said, they were traumatized by the rollout of the ACA, and so they didn't want to take any chances. Well, you can buy off-the-shelf software for unemployment assistance. You don't have to invent something.
Mm. Let's talk about the water bill and the success with that. Tell me a little bit of the background of that.
Well, the Water Resources Development Act, funds all of the work for our harbors all the way around the country.
And dredging and stuff like that?
Dredging, jetty work, any kind of maintenance that needs to be done. Back in the Reagan era, Ronald Reagan said, we should create a trust fund. And Congress went along with him, and they created a trust fund, which is funded by a tiny little tax on the value of imported goods that flow through our ports. So year in, year out, that money has been collected. But for many years, Congress diverted the money. So there's a $10 billion balance in the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund that hasn't been spent. And so the bill I passed, and very unusually, it passed unanimously in the House of Representatives. Every Democrat, every Republican supported it, would say, we're going to spend all of the tax money every year as it comes in on harbor maintenance because we have a huge backlog and deficit. And we're going to spend down that $10 billion that should have been spent years ago to catch up with maintenance around the country. So, I mean, we've got jetties failing here, you know, in Oregon. We got, you know, harbors silting in. I also got a provision in there that the Corps of Engineers will be able to, when they come to dredge, right now the law says, oh, well, you can't do anything out of the federal channel, even if the harbor, like at Gold Beach, is right there next to the channel. I'm authorizing them to go into marinas when the dredge is there and to get the silt out of the marinas. And I'm doubling the amount of money that will go to small ports and small, what we call small and emerging harbors, which is classified every single harbor in Oregon is either small or emerging. So that will dramatically benefit our state.
Sorry about that.
No problem. And we don't have to, and we don't have to raise taxes to do it, and we don't create a deficit by doing it. We're spending money that's in the bank.
And that's a really good thing. You know, like Oregon should have done with their money they received. Do you have any predictions on seats turning or things that might happen this election? I mean,
I think it's going to be nothing is normal in a COVID.
Nothing's normal in this last 4 years. I'm sorry. Just put COVID aside.
Right. Okay. Well, let's say it's been quite a.
I'm not trying to be partisan here. I'm really not.
I would say that, the election is going to be unlike one we've ever seen. I mean, normally in August, I go around and do town halls. I can't do town halls. We can't have, a couple of hundred people in a library somewhere. So I did one telephone town hall, and then you can't door knock. I mean, the campaigning is going to be, much more virtual than it's ever been before. I assume a lot of social media, a lot of, TV, radio, advertising, television, newspapers, whatever, mail. Maybe there'll be a lot of mail that the Postal Service might or might not be able to handle. I think it's going to be an interesting and unusual election year. My district was virtually tied between Trump and Clinton 4 years ago. I don't think it's changed much, And so, this is a competitive district. I'm working hard.
All right. And do you think this gives advantage to the new person coming in, or?
Well, people are pretty darn alienated. They're angry. Mm-hmm. I predicted before Trump won a single primary, just because traveling around my district and all the people who were desperate, angry and felt that they've been ignored. I said, this guy's going to become the president. And people are like, oh, you're nuts. I said, no, really. I started saying that before it even won a primary. And he is. Those people, he hasn't done much for them. But there's a whole lot of people who like what he says. Unfortunately, he hasn't delivered. They didn't get the tax cuts. The tax cuts, 80% of the money went to people who earn over $400,000 a year. Hmm. How many people in my district earn over $400,000?
Probably not many.
No, not too many. And they didn't need a tax cut. And then he promised infrastructure. He had seven infrastructure weeks, but all of his budgets proposed cutting federal investment infrastructure. So he didn't deliver there. He didn't deliver the jobs there. People still have an emotional attachment to him. But if they look at it and say, well, what actually did he do? Oh, he was going to build a wall and Mexico was going to pay for it. Well, he's now robbing other budgets to pay for the wall, the ineffective, unnecessary wall with Mexico. I mean, actually, Mexico now is happy to have it because they don't want Americans coming in. So because of the COVID, I mean, down in Arizona, they're blocking the roads at the border because they don't want the Americans coming in to get out of the beaches. He has wasted money. He's been incredibly disruptive, and he hasn't delivered on what he said he would for the American people.
All right, one last thing. I noticed a note being passed there, U.S. Coast Guard. Is there something about the Coast Guard you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I just had the Commandant of the Coast Guard come out to Coos Bay, North Bend. We spent the morning there. Coast Guard has a lot of issues, problems with housing. You know, I authorized the Coast Guard budget. We've managed finally for – they were flatlined for years, and in the last 2 years I've been able to get them like about 6 or 7% increase in their budget. But they are like the can-do service, and they can do, and they do things that are vital every day with aging ships. I mean, we were there at the North Bend Air Station, and the helicopters right now are they're 17. They're let's see, 84. They're 20. They're 16, 30, 36 years old, and they're gonna try and fly them till 2037. Wow. They're gonna have to totally rebuild them several times. I mean, we're starving, you know, an essential service. We're dumping money on, you know, the Army and the Air Force. I mean, a few bombers for the Air Force would pay for the whole Coast Guard budget. We've got to do better by them. We are finally going to start building icebreakers, which we desperately need. We've got one 50-year-old icebreaker, and we're having to salvage parts off another one to keep it running. And we're building offshore patrol cutters. I mean, since 9/11, the Coast Guard is doing a lot more in terms of homeland security. They're doing a massive amount in terms of drug interdiction. I mean, the cartels are putting the stuff on the water now, as opposed to trying to come through or over or under or around the land border. So, anyway, I was there to, you know, and we met with a lot of the crew, and the Coasties are great. So, it was a great couple of days, and and we got some ideas on more we can do to help.
All right, Peter DeFazio, thank you so much for stopping in today. We appreciate it, and it's always good to see you, and always good to hear what you got to say.
Thanks. It's also awesome to be on the coast where it's a little bit cooler.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much. And that's our September edition of Our Town. Join us again next month for new guests and new topics on Coast Radio.